Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month, we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning, afternoon and evening, depending on where you're located. Again, this week, we still might get some interruptions because of lack of power. So just bear with us if that's the case. Just stay on for a little bit if it cuts off. Today I'm going to continue with the Fukan Zazengi, or the universal promotion of Zazen. That's why I use Fukan Zazengi. It's a bit easier to say. We didn't get very far with it, so I'll read the whole lot again because it's a nice piece. Again, this was composed by Master Eihei Dogen, founder of Japanese Zen in Japan, and it was based on the Chinese Tendai meditation manuals from, I think, the 5th century. So we'll see if this resonates with you in any way. So the part that we did, the way is basically perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent on practice and realization? The Dharma vehicle is free and untrammeled. What need is there for a person's concentrated effort? Indeed, the whole body is far beyond the world's dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? It is never apart from one right where one is. What is the use of going off here and there to practice? And yet, if there is the slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as from heaven and earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. Suppose one gains pride of understanding and inflates one's own enlightenment, glimpsing the wisdom that runs through all things, attaining the way and clarifying the mind, raising an aspiration to escalate the very sky. One is making the initial partial excursions about the frontiers, but is still somewhat deficient in the vital way of total emancipation. Need I mention the Buddha who is possessed of inborn knowledge? The influence of his 6 years of upright sitting is noticeable still. So we got that far. Okay. Or Bodhidharma's transmission of the mind seal. The fame of his 9 years of wall gazing is celebrated to this day. Since this is the way, this was the case with the saints of old, how can people of today dispense with negotiation of the way? You should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illumine yourself. Body and mind themselves will drop away and your original face will be manifested. If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. For Sanzen, or penetrating Zen, a quiet room is suitable. Eat and drink moderately, cast aside all involvements and cease all affairs. Do not think good or bad. Do not administer pros and cons. Cease all movements of the conscious mind and the gauging of all thoughts and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. Penetrating Zen has nothing whatsoever to do with sitting or lying down. At the site of your regular sitting, spread out thick matting and place a cushion above it. Sit either in the full lotus or half lotus positions. In the full lotus position, you first place your right foot on your left thigh and your left foot on your right thigh. In the half lotus, you simply press your left foot against your right thigh. You should have your robes and belt loosely bound and arranged in order. Then place your right hand on your left leg and your left palm facing upwards on your right palm, thumb tips touching. Thus sit upright in correct bodily posture, neither inclining to the left nor to the right, neither leaning forward nor backwards. Be sure your ears are on a plane with your shoulders and your nose in line with your navel. Place your tongue against the front roof of your mouth with teeth and lips both shut. Your eyes should always remain open, and you should breathe gently through your nose. Once you have adjusted your posture, take a deep breath, inhale and exhale, rock your body right and left, and settle into a steady, immobile sitting position. Think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. This in itself is the essential art of Zazen. The Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It is simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the manifestation of ultimate reality. Traps and snares can never reach it. Once his heart is grasped, you are like the dragon when he attains the water, like the tiger when she enters the mountain. You must know that here, in Zazen, the right Dharma is manifesting itself, and from the first, dullness and distraction are put aside. When you arise from sitting, move slowly and quietly, calmly and deliberately. Do not rise suddenly or abruptly. In surveying the past, we find that transcendence of both unenlightenment and enlightenment and dying while either sitting or standing have all depended entirely on the strength of Zazen. In addition, the bringing about of enlightenment by the opportunity provided by a finger, a banner, a needle, a mallet, and the effecting of realization with the aid of a hosu, that's a fly whisk, a fist, a staff, or a shout, cannot be fully known by the practicing or realizing of supernatural powers either. It must be deportment beyond a person's thinking and seeing. Is it not the principle that is prior to his knowledge and perceptions? This being the case, intelligence or lack of it does not matter. Between the dull and the sharp-witted, there is no distinction. If you concentrate your effort single-mindedly, that in itself is negotiating the way. Practice realization is naturally undefiled. Going forward in practice is a matter of everydayness. In general, this world and other worlds as well, both in India and China, equally uphold the Buddha seal, and overall prevails the character of this school, which is simple devotion to sitting, but total engagement in immobile sitting. Although it is said that there are as many minds as there are people, still they all negotiate the way solely in Zazen. Why leave behind the seat that exists in your home and go off aimlessly to other dusty realms of other lands? If you make one misstep, you go astray from the way directly before you. You have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Do not use your time in vain. You are maintaining the essential working of the Buddha way. Who would take wasteful delight in the spark from a flintstone? Besides, form and substance are alike the dew on the grass. Destiny is like a dart of lightning, emptied in an instant, vanished in a flash. It's poetic, isn't it? Yeah. Please, honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. Devote your true energies to a way that directly indicates the absolute. Revere the person of complete attainment who is beyond all human agency. Gain accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas, succeed to the legitimate lineage of the ancestors' samadhi. constantly perform in such a manner, and you assured of being a person such as they. Your treasure house will open. Your treasure house will open of itself, and you will use it at will. So that's the whole thing. Now, I always encourage, well, not always, but many times I encourage people to be somewhat critical of these things, because it helps you to engage and see if it really applies to your life. But then at the same time, is see if by applying these things, it makes any difference to your practice. Now, to sort of go back to the original text, is that this one shows the basic teachings of Master Dogen, and practice realization is practice / realization, practice - realization, one word really, is the thing that he emphasizes over and over. He doesn't say practice a realization that will come in the future, or practice a realization that I had in the past, but real in the sense of the making real of this moment in time. That's what realization is real, and then the ization, making it, actualizing it as your life on a momentary basis. Now, how can that be so? Because quite often as human beings, we feel that we are separate from realization or enlightenment or whatever is better than we think. You know, but the main thing that practice realization, you're practicing this, and it's nothing to do with the projection of how things are. So if you practice this over and over in time, the grip of it's going to be better, or it's going to change in a certain way, begins to drop off, and there's an appreciation more of the ongoing nature of living, which is the practice realization that Dogen is talking about over and over. Now, I did a bit of an overview last time. So, you know, basically what Dogen is doing is trying to cover all the bases. So the first part, just for those that weren't here for the first part, he's trying to cover all the bases of practice from beginning to end. The first one, the first paragraph really is his own question. And I think many people also feel this when they read about Buddhism. You know, so it starts off, the way is basically perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? You have it already, and that's in line with, say, Shakyamuni Buddha's first statement, which is, wonder of wonders, all beings, the great earth, are the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. You know, so we have it. We are awakened to thus, I hope. You know, I don't see anyone asleep. It's not some other kind of awakening that he's talking about. And then the appreciation of this consciousness that occurs. But then he goes, but if there's the slightest discrepancy in the way, then you're as distant from heaven to earth. So without that, putting it into practice in terms of your own life and seeing if that's so, is that there tends to be a gap between, as they say, yourself and yourself. The self as the whole universe, and the self as this one that is here. And the reason I say the self as the whole universe is that is an aspect of, so there's the perceiver, the perceived, and the vehicle of perceiving. All of these are seamless between all things in this world. We don't need to do anything about it. You know, it's always going on 24/7. The world is practicing itself over and over in whatever way it practices. A dog doesn't practice like us, but it interacts in the same way, moment by moment, over and over. The trees, the plants, all of this universal practice is going on simultaneously as our own practice that we do, you know, again, on a momentary basis through seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, thinking. And then he goes on, you know, and it's not just about making an aspiration to do this, it's the actual doing of it. And then he goes into the place that we left off, which was, look at the examples of old and how they practiced. You know, and we tend to do that as human beings. You know, it can be Christianity. Maybe you take Christ or Saint Peter or some of the Mary Magdalene. You take one of them and you look at what they do, and then try and emulate that in one way or another. You copy that, and you see the effort that took. Here it mentions the Buddha, and obviously 2,500 years later, we're still practicing that way that he sort of uncovered. It's not that it wasn't there, it's that nobody saw it. And then he talks about Bodhidharma. You know, Bodhidharma comes nearly 1,000 years after the Buddha. And, you know, basically he practiced when he was a young man, or a prince in this case. You know, you guess you'd call him privileged, you know, in that way. And then when he was 80, he went to China. 80, can you imagine? You know, I don't think anyone in here is 80, but I congratulate you, you know, in that way. But at 80, he's going, well, I've always wanted to go to China, you know. So he gets on an Airbus, and no, he actually then went by sea, apparently, all the way around. You know, apparently he was from somewhere around Sri Lanka, possibly. And then he went, you know, went down past Malaysia and all the way around past Vietnam and then into southern China. I mean, that must have taken him a while to get there, you know, possibly a year, something like that. And then he continued to practice. He taught, you know, he taught the emperor, told the emperor the truth, which is not an easy thing to do when that is the most powerful man on the planet at that particular time. And then not only that, and this is a good lesson for all teachers, is that having this deep wisdom, he still chose to do Zazen for 9 years on his own, you know. Why? You know, I mean, he's got the badge and everything, but for him, that was the perfect manifestation. And of course, then he taught people, and apparently he taught for another... You know, from 80 till 120, he died, apparently. I mean, there's more stories about it. So would you say that's a good example? You know, it's, I don't know, at 80. Wow. I have to rewrite the contract. So, and then, you know, then he says, you know, how can people today dispense with negotiation of the way? That's kind of interesting. The translators use the word negotiation. You know, it's like you negotiate with, you know, in this case, life, basically. You're negotiating how to get through it. We negotiate when with family. We negotiate with kids. You know, it's kind of interesting in that way. There's an interaction in that way. And I think it's more to do with the interactions that we have as human beings. It's not just it's fixed, this is the way, we just follow it in that way. There's the negotiation in the sense of, okay, if I'm going to enter into this, I want to enjoy it, or I want to be of service, you know, and so how can that be done within the confines of this particular situation or circumstance? If you have a different interpretation of it, then, you know, obviously, you know, just bring that up in the discussion later. And then, you know, then he starts to deal with things that do occur in terms of teaching Zen and running communities of Zen. It says you should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech. So there's a big, you know, tendency. Well, yeah, I've read about Zen. You know, this is what Zen is, and I'm good. You know, I know what it is now. I'm good. You know, but it's not really that. You know, it's like, yeah, I know how to build a house. Oh, huh? Well, have you built one yet? You know. There's a pretty dark story. Anyone see Braveheart, the movie? Mm-hmm. He goes, so the prince's boyfriend is there, and he goes, yeah, I know something about military tactics. So he goes, really? The king, you know, Longshanks, who was apparently a pretty vicious king. He wasn't a very likable character. And so he grabs, he goes, oh, tell me about military tactics. And he takes him over to the window. And the guy's telling him, you know, and then he just pushes him out the window, you know. So there's a difference between those who have been there and done it and those that is still pretty much up in the head in that respect. So really, it's that practice is so important in terms of the actualization of Zen practice. And you know, part of that is the constant teaching that life is giving us and being in the position of being student no matter where you are. I'm always studying life, and it never ceases to amaze me, and it never disappoints me. It doesn't mean I don't like things. Yeah, I don't like things, but you know, it's just like always there is something new, stuff that comes from left field in many different ways. Okay, and then you know, then he goes on. Now this is one of the nicest. Say visual effects that comes from his teachings. He goes, you should therefore cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech. There's nothing wrong with it, but just don't stick there. There's plenty more to go. And he goes, and to learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illumine yourself. One of his nicest statements that he made, because this is kind of visual, you know, it's like we're always trying to attain something, go for something, you know, become something in that way. Now, you should try it sometime. Just stand up and then take a backward step and see what happens. It's a very interesting thing. Now, if you have a mindset that will do that, you know, rather than projecting into the future, just take that backward step, look at where you stand. And then what begins to happen is that then you can begin to actualize this over a period of time. Rather, you know, just be here. Take stock of what's here. Don't let your mind constantly be driven into the future in that way. to illumine the self. If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. Now, this is a koan by Master Yakuzan from maybe... I think he was from about the 8th century. Dogen's like 13. And Yakuzan would say, if you want to be a person of suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. Seeing as though you're already such a person, why worry about such a thing? So it doesn't leave you much leeway there, does it? You want to be a such person of suchness. But a lot of people, they want to practice this thing called Buddhism. You know. This thing called Buddhism, but Buddhism is the practice of awakening. Seeing as though you're already awake, then what? Why are you going to worry about being awake? No, I'm not being facetious with that. It's just that, do you worry about being awake? We worry about other things, but being awake seems to come naturally, you know? I don't wake up in the morning and go, oh God, where is it? In that respect. But again, with writings like this, they can telescope out and you can just take parts of it and then apply it to your life and see if it actually functions. And then he goes on, turning light and illuminating yourself, body and mind of themselves will drop away and your original face will be manifested. So again, original face is another koan from the sixth ancestor. Who asked Monk Mio, what is your original face before your parents were born? So this is a direct reference to that. Body and mind of themselves will drop away. So again, this is, how do you describe something like that? I mean, this is something that Dogen has experienced, and this was so-called in his enlightenment koan from a few years before this with Master Tendo Nyojo. But, you know, what really is that? I mean, if you haven't had that experience, it becomes difficult to talk about it. I mean, on a very sort of rational and direct experience, is that when self-description and placement is not being engaged in one's mind, is that everything else can enter in and be there. You know, you could say along that, but it's not just in that way. It's when it actually strikes you in such a way that it is a confirmation of that. I don't need to have a description of myself to live. You know, just like a little baby, it's got very little in terms of being able to communicate, engage with the rest of the world, except in a limited way. But at the same time, it has the whole universe right there. Everything is manifested in that way. And it doesn't need other at that point. It's just trying to make sense of whatever it is born into at that point. So body and mind drop away. In other words, our essential koan is that I am separate than the rest of the world. At that point, is solved. Is that no, we are the world in itself. There isn't a problem in that respect. So quite often, in terms of, you know, even with psychology, etc., is that once we begin to lighten our own load, it becomes a little easier to live in that respect. But don't try and work the world out, because it's too big. You're trying to put something that's universal into something that's very limited in that respect. where are we? So, if you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. And obviously, he's talking about now. So, if this is what is going on, if you're listening to the talk or talking is going on, then practice that. And then in that process, then see the things that take you away from it. You have to always remember is that whenever we practice, we see the clarity that's underneath. But at the same time, we also see what takes us away from that basic clarity. Having a confirmation of that basic clarity makes it easier to live with all of the ways that we distract ourselves in that sense. You know, these ways that we distract ourselves are very much like the friend that comes and sleeps on your couch and drinks all your beer. You know, it's nice having them, but at the same time, you know, it's a little much. Anyway, that's how my mind works. Now, you know, in this too, I mean, I don't know how many of you are interested in this, because this is a lot of nuts and bolts stuff about how to sit. But one of the things that quite often Master Dogen does is that he emphasizes the process of coming to sit. Now, I would encourage people to do that, because quite often when we come into the Zendo, and especially if you're integrating it with your daily life, you know, I know for myself, I may come into the Zendo and my mind is still dwelling on the things that I need to do or things I need to take care of or people. And but then the forms, then they can help to take my mind off that and to settle them into being. So a lot of what he's talking about is the transition practices, which are very important to Zazen. So, you know, the things like bowing is that put your mind into bowing, and then, you know, adjusting your seat, and then sit down, put your mind into that. And then folding your legs, or kneeling or sitting in the chair, put your mind into that. And then just adjusting your posture, getting your back straight. So you're putting your energy into your body now, not just letting it stick up in the head. And then after that, similar thing with breathing, you know, put your attention on your breath. And then again, it's taking it away from the head. You know, get a good scent by by allowing the body just to sit. Then after a while, you may find that you've left those things behind and you're a lot more prone to just really being as this. And he does the same for getting up too. I remember Jo Kobeck, when she was at Zen Center, she would talk a lot about transitions. More, she would talk more in from the sense of getting up from Zazen and then continuing that into walking meditation. So, you know, when you get up, don't just jump up. It's just, you know, just feel your body, just get yourself ready for the transition. And then how can I maintain this into getting up? And then, you know, fluffing up the cushion, doing your chair, sitting facing outwards, and then carrying that into walking. And obviously then those transitions go from, you know, more Zazen to, say, going out, eating, working, all of these things. The transitions are really important in terms of constant practice until the point where naturally you enter into the next thing simply because consciousness does that anyway. So he's being kind in this way. I mean, obviously, not many of us sit in full lotus or half lotus or even Burmese or Seiza. You know, the important thing is that you do that transition and put your mind back into doing whatever you do. So don't think that I'm avoiding this, is because we, you know, here we just had beginner's mind session and we've also had Zen meditation instruction. So I'm not going to repeat, you know, what's gone on in that way. Now, this is kind of interesting too, because he also talks about, you know, just the basics of Zazen. He goes, for penetrating into Zen, so he's using Sanzen, not the Sanzen, which is the Rinzai Dogsan, a quiet room is suitable. And I think most of us would agree with that. You know, if you want to sit, it's probably better not sitting with the kids, you know, and you know, although they may want to join in, you never know. Let's see, where are we? And he goes, eat and drink moderately. Now, this really helps, you know. I mean, I'm not saying alcohol, you know. It's like, don't have too much to eat or too much to drink before you sit, because your stomach's going to feel full, you know. Like Yastani Roshi would say, don't eat more than two-thirds of your capacity. Good advice, and then your energy can flow a little bit better in that way. And then he goes on, try and leave your affairs on one side. You know, don't get into good and bad while you're preparing to sit. Do not administer pros and cons. You know, rather find out on that level. Cease all movements of the conscious mind, the gauging of thoughts and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. Okay, maybe I'll put that up for a vote. How many of you have designs on becoming a Buddha? All right. Well, there's no one in here. We're good. We're good on that level. None of them wants to be a Buddha. I think they'd have to sit too still. And then, you know, I mean, these are the things, is that, like, I know for myself, is that if I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, I'm going, well, I could probably think a lot better if I was out on the beach. You know, this is not really the place for that. So, you know, I'll do the best I can with this. And the thing is, it's not like I am not going to think forever. It's just for this period of time, put it on one side. It's one of the most powerful techniques, just for now. Put it on one side, thought will come back like a bungee. There's no problem with that. And then he goes, Sanzen or penetrating into Zen has got nothing to do with sitting or lying down, which is true. You know, penetrating into living or life occurs in sitting and lying down. It also occurs in walking, working, seeing other people and how to help them, all of these things, there is never a time where Zazen does not reach those places. And when I say Zazen, I don't mean just the Za, which is sitting, but the Zen, which is jhana, which is the direct experience of this moment in time. That, you know, we can't avoid that, but we always like to make it particular to places or circumstances or ease or not easy in that respect. Okay, let's see. So we'll jump over the sitting part. But you know, some of these are also like Zen Qigong parts, like putting the tongue on the roof of your mouth is actually the completion of a microcosmic orbit. It also makes you not salivate as much. The mudra is there, so it's active, embracing, passive. If you do it the other way, it's passive, embracing, and active. You know, so we are actually circuits as human beings, which they're beginning to find out about. So these also help in terms of your own concentration. Okay, we've done all of those things. So now he goes into more of the essence of sitting. Think of not thinking. How do you think? So somebody asked Yakuzan, how do you think of not thinking? And so Yakuzan said, non-thinking. So, you know. Now, don't think I understand that. You know, don't. You know, I mean, the thing, that's an application to see what that is. How do you think of not thinking? You're thinking of not thinking. What is that? Non-thinking. So what's non-thinking? You know, so I mean, that's something, that's a koan in itself. It's important to really look at that. And, you know, even though I don't know an intellectual answer on that, I get the idea, you know, or the non-idea in that respect. A lot of these things, they just stop the process so that there can be some space there. And that's an amazing thing. It's like when I went into, what was it, Wakefield Prison in England. I wasn't admitted. I went in to do a Jukai. And I asked, you know, because I didn't know them and I didn't know what interested them about Zen. I said, well, what does Zazen or Zen do for you? And they said, it gives me a space between something happening and me reacting. And for prisoners, that is an amazing thing, you know. And that's not coming from my definition. This is what they said. And, you know, a lot of them sort of agreed with that. And there were, this was a category A prison, by the way, which is, it's not like A grade in terms of housing, you know. It's like, these were criminals. But human, you know, that had their own light, their own life in that way. But that's what Zazen does, you know, is just that quite often, we don't talk about the habit and impulse and the effects that Zazen has on that. And I'm talking about the negative habits and impulse that we have. It begins to give us a space there so that we don't immediately jump in and, you know, get involved in ways that are the same old thing over and over and over. So, yeah, so again, it's just that aspect of just being present to and then being able to process and then do an action that can be appropriate to the circumstance, etc. And then, so he goes, yeah, think of not thinking. This is in itself the essential art of Zazen. Now, it is interesting that he does that. I mean, a lot of people think, well, I shouldn't think, and because if I do, then it's not doing Zazen. And this isn't true. You know, I mean, I've seen this through the Zen masters that I've known, But thought takes its true position, basically, as one of the six senses. It's not the boss anymore, you know. It's not, because I think that this world should conform to my wishes. I'm disappointed because it doesn't. It's not that kind of thing. It's that, you know, yeah, it's cold. It's dark. It's a little bit dark right now. You know, the direct experience of this moment in time is informing me. And if I need to kind of go, oh, I forgot to close the door on my car, I better go and fix it, you know, because the rain's going to come in and fill it up. You know, thought has its position in terms of our own life. But instead of causing all this problem, it's a really good interpreter of facts. And all of the other senses give the information that is necessary to make decisions when they're there, you know. And obviously it goes more than that, but that's a good enough start. Okay, so now we go on to other things, and this quite often is what happens with the with how Zen is understood. He goes, the Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It is simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss.
Yeah.
And my Zibi Roshi would say, that's a bit much.
Yeah.
But it may be the gate, but, you know, you don't have to go there. You stay outside the gate. But the Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. Now, that's kind of interesting because a lot of people think that that's what meditation is. You know, I was watching some YouTube and they had a commercial come on, and there's this lady comes on and she's sitting up straight with a smile on her face. That's meditation. So once you've learned meditation, once you've taught the meditation, then what? Now what are you left with there? You know, it's not learning meditation. Learning in many ways doesn't take much. I mean, I've seen people that have been certified to teach meditation within 2 years. You know, here you could say person that's been here a year, they can teach meditation, but that's not it either. You know, basically is that. We are the practice realization. Right from the beginning, the realization is a momentary basis being that is constantly on there. We can't freeze and then reflect back. It's just, well, we can, but that's not what our life is. You know, that's going on all the time. Once you learn meditation, basically that's taking the backward step to where you are and seeing that meditation is consciousness itself and is functioning 24/7. It's not even a matter of having something and becoming something. It's that no matter what you are, this is continuing 24/7. And those teachings are coming in, light, sound, taste, touch, are coming in all the time, you know. There's so much there. And people say, well, in my area, there's not much teaching of Zen, you know. And yet the whole world is teaching us on a momentary basis. But don't think it's just in good ways either. You know, I've learned as much from negatives as I've done from positives. You know, life will never conform to how you think it should be. You know, especially you hear that, well, you're a Buddhist, therefore, you know, fill in the blank. Yeah. No, I'm just a bad Buddhist in that way. So, now the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. I mean, again, this is a koan. You know, they in Japan they have that word jijiyu zanmai, which is the thing that people are meant to aspire to in one way or another. But what is totally culminated enlightenment? What is it? Can you freeze it? You know, can you package it? Is it graspable in those ways? But if you look at, you know, basically we are the culmination of 4.3 billion, 4. What is it? 6? 4 billion years of evolution. We are the culmination of that. Does that make you feel any better about it? You know, it's just like, who, me? Enlightenment, the shedding of light is culminated now. It's the only place it exists. You know, so you don't need to put it further forward if there's any bliss, that is great. But please enter through that gate. Don't stay on the outside watching Zen occur or your life occur. Is to enter into it in that respect. It goes on. Let's see, how are we doing? Wow. Okay, that's as far as we go. So we did the first page, and we can finish up later. Okay, so I'd like to open it up for any Q&A.
You're now able to unmute yourself and use the raise hand function if you'd like to ask a question. And if there are questions in the room, raise.
Do you know who the intended audience was for this?
Everyone.
It says the universal. But so that was this distributed? I mean, like, to the other, would people who weren't monks see this?
I would. Various, but... You know, I can't say because I wasn't there, but you know the. This would be mainly he wrote this in a monastic setting. Mm. Actually wrote it at a Rinzai temple called Keninji, where he was the abbot. It was Isai and Myozen's temple. They would have had lay people, you know, reading it. I mean, it's in some ways it's a very steep writing. You know, is very direct. It's very, you know, straight to the matter of life and death. So I don't think he would have restricted it. But the interesting thing with a lot of Dogen's writings, and I don't think the Fukan Zazengi would have been in that, is that they were so highly elevated that somebody basically put them in a trunk in a temple and buried them until they were discovered in the 18th century.
Oh.
Huh. So that's why he's not that well known outside of Japan.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, that's what I would say with it. It's kind of got a very intense aspect to it, but it's also a condensed writing that was based on a 5th century Tendai meditation manuals done by Jue A, I think was his Chinese name. I probably massacred it, but yeah. Thank you.
Question?
Who?
Daniel.
Oh, Daniel. Okay. Hey, Bushin, you're on.
Hi, Roshi. Yeah, hey. Thanks for that. It's really good to hear. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I was just thinking about that sentence about the Zazen I speak of is not learning meditation.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I sit with some people here in Florida, and, you know, one of the things I hear is, I mean, I get a sense, and even for myself, I look at this, that, you know, we're looking to learn something, to get something out of it, you know, to take it and then apply it to life somewhere, somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're already living. Yeah.
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 And, you know, I go to a yoga class and I want to learn something and then
be able to
apply it somewhere. And then, you know, and then when I sit with people, I feel like I don't have anything. There's like, I don't know.
Yeah, and that's a very honest way. I mean, I feel the same way. I don't have something that they don't have, put it that way. And I was talking with Genpo Roshi, you know, he was saying the same thing, you know. And he's going to be 80 this year. But it's a very, you know, it's a very important thing. I mean, but there's a lot of experience there. You know, I look at the people that I admire, you know, like some soccer players, for instance, and they still practice. Even after, you know, practicing since their teens, they may be now in their late 30s, but every day they practice in one way or another. And but at the same time, you know, it's just like, I remember reading something about a basketball player. He said, from the first time you pick up a basketball, you're a basketball player. And it's the same with Zazen. You know, as soon as you start doing Zazen, you're a Zazenist. You know, it you don't have to have something. You do that, and that's your manifestation in that way. And people come in, you know, especially this week, people come in and they'll say, I'm a beginner, you know, and I'll go, yeah, well, I didn't say it, but, you know, it's just like, yeah, I'm a beginner too. This is the place where I begin, you know, here. It's not like I've got, you know, in many ways, the past is irrelevant in that way. Makes a good story. But always, you know, it's like free form. Life is free form. And then if we talk about things like learning Zazen or yoga, it's pointed. So we have the point of learning Zazen. We have the point of realization. We have the point of accomplishment. You know, the point of passing a koan mu. Or whatever there. But experientially, there's no point. I mean, we can focus onto something, but there is no point there.
Yeah, you know, that makes me think of somebody. There was it's an anecdote that I read or I heard somewhere about a jazz pianist who was playing and then finished playing and somebody said, wow, that's fantastic. What's the meaning of that? What does that mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And the pianist just sat back down, played it again and said, that's what it means.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's going to mean something different to everybody. And that's the same with Zazen. It's the same with life too. You know, I may be looking out and trying to go, hey, life's great. And then for someone around me, they may not see it that way. I'm speaking bullshit to them. And that way, I understand that. But then how do you make that bridge? I mean, this is also practiced in that way, is that, you know, that again, that's the koan of living, is how do we reach somebody? How do they reach us? How do we get on the same page in that respect? A lot of the teachings are around that. Everybody has it from the beginning. But that's where it's free form. You don't know who you're going to teach. It's not preordained. It's, you know, in any way, we practice through koans, through giving talks, through meeting people in all kinds of ways. And that's all we can do is live in that respect. And it's not about accumulation of merit either, you know.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Karina has a question.
Yeah. Karina?
Thank you. I was here last time in March, and Jokai Roshi talked also about the backward step.
Yeah,
and that was the first time I had ever heard that phrase, and I'm very new to all of this. And it really landed with me, and it's a phrase and a sensation, I guess, that I've thought about a lot since then.
Yeah.
And when you were talking today about the transitions between different activities, I started thinking about doing all of them for the last 36 hours or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that when we turn, first we bow to our cushion, and then we turn away from the cushion and step backward onto the setup.
Yeah.
And it just really, I just wanted to ask if that's part of the, why we do it that way.
No.
No, actually, we're not bound to the cushion. We're bound to the people next to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's, I mean, the cushion doesn't care, you know, as far as we know. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just a matter of appreciation. Again, something we've inherited, but those things are reminders, you know. I mean, a lot of the forms are just reminders to bring ourselves back to this moment. But the backward step, yeah, I mean, that sort of shocked me, you know. I was always moving forward towards something rather than, okay, let's have a look at what's here. And then the change occurred. And I think it's a really good way that it's been, or Dolgan put it, you know, because it's meant to kind of pull people back to going, look at what we have, take stock, look. Right, Morningstar, you're on.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you, Talk. I have no desire to be the Buddha. I mean, that has never been, you know, I've been meditating for a long time. I never desire to be the Buddha or even fully enlightened. I just want to be enlightened enough. What?
I don't know. There's just a cacophony here. People going off, you know, either agreeing or doing capping phrases to what you're saying.
So,
you know,
but I want to be enlightened enough so that I don't be so triggered by things. And like, for instance, you know, I go hiking on the trails when, and I've made no big progress when I have to do dodging poo from people's dogs they don't clean up after, you know, or to trying to decide that I have to carry their shit.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like, welcome to the human race. You're kind of like the Buddha in that way.
Yeah, and there's some dhammakanda with that. I've been reflecting, okay, so, you know, what is it? Because, you know, I'm just not making much progress with that. I make progress with other things. I accept how people, you know, treat the land is their idea of, you know, like, for instance, BLM land. So there's one thing that's like, quote, we own our property. But, you know, and property that's really owned by the state, the country. And they have a right to, if they want to put a flag up somewhere, I guess that is their right. Or if they want to do a particular kind of art, you know, or do something, which I think is destructive to the environment, or... But you see,
they're
right. I'm just trying to dance with that.
Yeah, and you know, again, there's a lot to practice, you know, in terms of practice. And the thing is, you know, we learn from our mistakes, and then there's four criteria, you know, time, place, person, and amount with who we're dealing with. Then, you know, that's an ongoing practice in itself. In other words, I'm not saying I don't have solution. I don't have solutions. The important thing is to give it your best shot.
Right. Yeah. So it's the dancing poo mantra.
Yeah. Well, I mean, by the look of it, is you're one of those people. You know, they say, psychologists say there's two kinds of people. Those that step in the shit and those that walk around it.
Yeah.
So you're the second kind.
All right, thank you very much.
I
appreciate it.
Inyo? Yeah. You're going to be filmed.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. Got no head.
I appreciate your comments on transition.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't thought about that too much in quite a while. And it made me realize too often at home, I just... especially if it's early in the morning, get up, plop down on my cushion and start sitting. And then my mind is like all over the place. And
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that reminder that the transitions can be very helpful. In that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. No, I think so. You know, I mean, in a lot of life, it's like that. You know, you're a karate master and you know that prep is important and transitioning your mind to whatever's going to come up in whatever way and that concentration. But it's the same process, really, but not as dangerous, you know, in that respect. But, you know, you see it with people is that, you know, quite often when they're going to do something that is difficult, that their energy comes back to, you know, to themselves. It's important for them. And I always appreciate that with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I'm working on something.
Yeah.
Like repairing a guitar or something. I don't just go in there and start. I spend a lot of time saying, if I do this, this could happen. If I do this, this could happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Grab and make sure that I'm comfortable with what's going to, you know, transition from knowing what needs to be done to
actualizing
the doing of it.
Yeah.
Properly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Okay, thank you.
You.
Shoot.
You're good.
I was really moved by what you quoted that guy from in prison saying that Zen gave him a moment.
Yeah.
And I've heard like two things I find kind of that they are contradictory. I've heard somebody, maybe it was Suzuki Roshi, who said first thought best. Mm-hmm. And then I've heard a number of people in recovery say first thought wrong.
Yeah.
And I wonder where does wisdom lie in the realm of spontaneity versus, you know, reflection, or I guess.
Well, I mean, part of it is knowing yourself. You know, it's like when I was a kid, I used to fight a lot, you know, and then eventually it got down to through practice, and I practiced for a couple of years, and I got in this situation where somebody was being really unfair, and he even followed us to another store. And he started creating a scene around this. And I was with a friend who I'd known since I was 4 years old. And I was, you know, by then I was about 20, 21. And still a hothead, you know. And so, you know, I applied my Buddhism. You know, I kind of went, okay, I'm just going to walk away from this and go in. And he followed me into the car. And so at that point, the red mist descended. And I was gonna kick him in the teeth across the gear stick in this car. And then I just looked at him and I went, this doesn't work. And I just pushed him away. And I looked around at my friend, he got out of the car, you know, he got the message. I looked at my friend who'd known me since I was four, and I said, that was really something, wasn't it? And him knowing me, he goes, yeah, that really was, you know. So these things work, you know, but part of it is looking at what works and what doesn't work and where it leads you. That's wisdom in that way. Also, wisdom is the inherent aspect, which is life is like this. So then how do I deal with it? You know, but practice does do that. It makes you see what's in front of you, you know. And then you've got some more options rather than the old habitual options that came in the past.